This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross.
When you steal money from white folks, that's your business. But when you steal from blacks, that's my business.
You sound just like my part preacher, part undertaker, and part God. Why don't you take it easy, man? Cool it. What's the matter with you?
The black people been exploited by white people. Filth like you come along. Skin them some more. Judgment, Deke. Judgment.
That's a scene from the 1970 movie Cotton Comes to Harlem, based on the novel of the same name by Chester Himes. Many people know Himes only through that story. My guest James Salla says that Himes was not only a great crime writer, he was one of the first great documenters of the inner city, and he became America's central black writer. Salas writes detective novels inspired by Himes' books. Now Salas has written a biography of Himes. Chester Himes, who was born in 1909 and died in 1984, was a crime novelist who knew about his subject firsthand. After several skirmishes with the law, he was convicted of armed robbery and served 7.5 years of a 20-year sentence. It was in prison that he started writing stories and was first published in Esquire. The byline on his early stories was his prison number. It wasn't until 1936, when a sketch of him appeared on Esquire's contributors page, that readers learned Himes was African American. I asked Salas what it was about prison life that led Himes to start writing.
He always said it was because he had a lot of time on his hands, which I'm sure was part of it. He also claims, rightfully, I think, that it gave him a sort of protection that not only the inmates, but the people, the overseers, the warden and all, were a little in awe of him and a little afraid of him because he had this connection with the outside world and he had this voice.
A connection through publication.
Right.
Now, although he was shaped by prison, he had a bourgeois upbringing. Describe what his parents did.
They were actually middle class. His mother was educated. She was looked white and often passed for white. His father, Joseph Sandy Himes, was a professor at a land-grant college. He taught metalsmithing, blacksmithing, and apparently was extremely good at what he did. Estelle, the mother, Chester's mother, married Joseph Sandy Himes, thinking that he would become a dean of the college and really be a social figure. Joseph Sandy probably didn't have that much ambition. He was very happy to just be a teacher. And over the years, the marriage collapsed. Joseph Sandy withdrew. Estelle grew frustrated and rather angry at Joseph, and eventually sort of transferred her expectations for Joseph Sandy onto Chester. Chester, in turn, began withdrawing from the family because of everything that was going on and started acting out. This is the period when he started hanging around with bad people and doing bad things. He was working as a bellhop and running liquor to people and probably setting up liaisons with prostitutes and hanging out in bad clubs and drinking a lot.
You write that Himes spent much of his life alternately courting and railing against middle-class white values. Do you think that has to do with his mother sometimes passing for white and trying to push him into these middle-class values?
Absolutely. I think that Chester was formed very much by the discords that went on in the family. There's a book called The Third Generation in which he deals with this directly. He certainly felt that was an important thing. Chester, if you look at pictures of Chester, he's always beautifully, immaculately dressed. He had very cultured speech. He was an educated man. But he was drawn all his life to this other side, to this sort of street persona that he had developed in prison, or before prison, when he was hanging out in the streets of Cleveland. I think he felt that this was very much a central feeling for him. And I think he never quite managed to grab a hold of a way to deal with this until he wrote The End of a Primitive and then in the Harlem books. In the Harlem books, he actually confronts that sort of street persona and that absolute outsider image that he had of himself. And I think that's one of the reasons that the books are so powerful. And I think that in that in that mode, in that manner. He was a precursor of much that's happened not only in African-American fiction, but in films like Boys in the Hood and Spike Lee and other people.
Now, you say that when Himes got out of prison, he expected that since he'd already been publishing stories in Esquire, that he'd be able to publish a novel and have a writing career. What did happen professionally when he got out of prison?
He wandered around doing sort of caretaker work. He did various odd jobs. He did have a book accepted rather early by Doubleday, and this was If He Hollers, Let Him Go, which is still a wonderful novel. He assumed that he was going to win a prize for it, that it was going to be well published. Something happened with the publisher, and it's really difficult to tell what it was. Chester felt that one of the editors had interfered with the book and had maybe stopped printing even or warehoused the copies. Whatever happened, copies were not generally available. He got excellent reviews for the book, but the copies weren't there, and he got a lot of complaints from people that they just could not find the book. This sort of thing continued with the second novel, which was published by a prestigious publisher, Knopf. It got great reviews, but it didn't sell, and eventually just kind of died. It was as though they published the books and threw them out the window and just hoped someone would pick them up and read them and you know, maybe take them home.
Well, unfortunately, he's not the first writer or the last who's had that kind of experience.
Exactly.
But I'm wondering how much of that you think had to do with him being a young African-American writer.
I think probably a lot had to do with it. Chester certainly felt that there was growing prejudice. He also felt that he misbehaved, that he didn't write the things people expected. He wasn't doing what proper literary people wanted him to do. He also felt that...
I mean, because he was writing about crime?
That he was writing about, about very, very dark subjects, and then he was writing directly about black life in America, and he felt that neither whites nor blacks really wanted him to be doing that. The very intense portraits of what it's like. If He Hollers is a magnificently structured book. It's almost structured like a Greek tragedy. It's 7 days in the downward spiral of an educated black man. You can read it as a racist story, or a story about racism and what happens to a black man who just isn't allowed to be a man in society. You can also just read it as the problem of a man fulfilling himself and becoming what he best can be in American society, and you can read it as a just general indictment of American society. This carries on through all of the other books. But he was talking about bad things. He wasn't being an assimilationist the way he thought American literary establishment thought he should be.
In 1941, Chester Himes moved to California. He tried to make it in Hollywood, didn't succeed. In 1944, he moved to New York, and that's where he started writing his Harlem series. What was the Harlem like that he was writing about?
The Harlem that he writes about is an imaginary place. It's not the real Harlem. It's sort of composed of bits and pieces of a Harlem that was around in the 40s, though he was writing these books much later, and of just things that he imagined. And he says that when he was writing the books, he was just making this up. He was writing them for a French audience. These books were actually commissioned by Gallimard and were published first in France. And he was very conscious that he was writing for the French public, and he said they will believe anything about American life, and they will believe anything about black American life. So he was very aware that this was sort of a Harlem of the mind and a sort of place that he was conjuring up. He had come to using a-realist narrative modes with The End of a Primitive, his most autobiographical novel. And in these books was continuing to use African-American tropes. He was doing Dirty Dozens. He was exaggerating. He was telling outrageous stories and just hanging plots on shaggy dog stories and just going on and on and on. It was a completely different kind of literature. It's something we had never seen before.
One of his most famous novels is Cotton Comes to Harlem. What was the storyline about?
Well, it was about a number of things. It was a typical shaggy dog thing in which everyone was pursuing a bale of hay that had money in it for whatever their reasons were. But typically, Chester was writing about a lot of things. He was writing about the sort of Marcus Garvey Back to Africa movement. He was writing about assimilationism. He was writing about all sorts of things that were going on in America in the 60s. It's a magnificent portrait of that period and of what was going on then. And the movie of Cotton Comes to Harlem was actually a major turning point. It was the thing that made Chester's later years possible. He got a significant sum of money from it. It was also a very important movie in that it was an all-black cast, all-black crew, directed by Ossie Davis, and is generally the way I introduce Himes to people who don't know him. I mention the movie and everyone knows instantly who he is.
You write that the form of the detective novel gave Chester Himes some release from his sense of the injustices America had done him. What do you mean by that? Did he write about those injustices in the novels?
He did in the early novels, but as he got on to the Harlem novels, I think he had found release from autobiographical materials and was just winging it and improvising on themes. He discovered gradually with the books, having started them as just potboilers and having gone intuitively in to see what he could do with it, to see what was in there, as a jazz musician would say, he found that he could actually write anything he wanted to about American society. He could give very vivid, very, very dark, and very funny pictures of American society and of racism and of being a black man in American society. And he could do it with an intensity that was really not possible in realistic fiction. And he could do it in a way that guaranteed he would have readers, that people would actually read this, be entertained, and maybe not even realize that they were being damaged by what they were reading.
Being damaged by what they were reading?
Yes, Chester is a very damaging writer. He's someone you don't get over. He's in your face. He hurts. He hurts you. He makes you feel things that maybe you don't want to feel. He's very, very powerful, and a lot of people find Chester very difficult reading for that very reason.
You want to give me an example of something that had that effect on you?
When I read The End of a Primitive, I start weeping about two-thirds of the way through because I don't want these things to be happening to this person, and I feel so attached to this person and the voice that I just want it not to be. I don't want it to happen. There are a number of places in the Harlem novels that I actually feel the same way. Things are going on and happening to people, and I just don't want it to happen.
My guest is detective writer James Salas. His new book is a biography of Chester Himes. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is detective writer James Salas. He's written a new biography of the writer who most inspired him, Chester Himes. How would you say Chester Himes' writing compared to his contemporaries like Ralph Ellison and Richard Wright?
My contention is that Chester's writing is the equivalent of anyone writing at the time. And I really believe that he should be held in equal esteem to Richard Wright and to Ralph Ellison and to Jimmy Baldwin. And in fact, to Hemingway and all the other writers that were writing at the same time, who were contemporaneous with him, I think there aren't absolute literary standards, much as our professors would like to make us think there are. A writer's standing comes as a result of many things: the fact that his books are available, the fact that readers are ready to hear what he has to say, and most of all, the luck of the draw. And as we've been talking, Chester's luck was never very good. I think that If He Hollers, Let Him Go is certainly as strong as anything Richard Wright wrote. I think that Lonely Crusade is actually a better book than Invisible Man. It deals with the same material as Invisible Man, which is the courting of intelligent blacks and of labor unions by the Communist Party. But it has a dimension that Invisible Man doesn't have, because it's also a love story. It's a story of a dissolution of a black marriage told at the same time as all its other stuff is going on. I think it's a dreadful shame that Chester is forgotten, and I'm not in any way disparaging Richard Wright, who was a very fine writer, or Ralph Ellison, who was a very fine writer, but Chester wrote a lot of books, and he wrote in a lot of veins and a lot of modes, and they're very, very important books, and I would really like him to have some sort of position and credence, as these other writers do. I'd like to see him placed beside them.
Chester Himes moved to Europe in 1954 and lived there for the rest of his life. Was he disillusioned with the U.S.?
He was extremely disillusioned with the U.S. He felt that American racism was something he could never get away from, and he felt that he had actually been done a lot of harm by the poor publication given his books. He also felt that with Lonely Crusade, he'd been universally reviled. He thought that people on the right hated it, and people on the left hated it, and people in the middle didn't know what to make of it, and felt very bad about this, and was unable to actually sell another book at this point. Richard Wright had been pushing Chester to come to Paris or to come to Europe, and Chester had been wanting to do so for some time. He finally made a sale which gave him enough money to do it, and he fled. It was the first opportunity he had, and he went. Basically, he came back to the States one time to live for a very short period and went back to Europe, and after that there were just very brief visits. He stayed in Paris for some time, and then sort of bounced around France and Spain and other parts of Europe for many, many years, and eventually settled in Spain, where he and his wife, Leslie, built a home.
After Chester Himes moved to Europe, did he keep writing, and what was the very end of his life like?
He actually did his best writing there. He started the end of The Primitive there. He wrote all of the Harlem novels. There are eight of them, and there's a ninth one that was finished after his death. So, yes, he did. But this was a very intense period. This was a very few years that he wrote all this. He became the subject of a series of crippling strokes, and towards the end of his life, one entire hemisphere of his brain was wiped out. So he lost the physical ability to keep writing, and he eventually lost language itself. He was cared for by Leslie, his wife, but for the last 10 years or so, he really wasn't able to do much. He did write two volumes of autobiography, which are extremely important and wonderful books, but even with those, with the second one, he was pretty much losing it, and Leslie had to do a lot of editing and put it back together. He was sad. He wanted to keep writing, but he just physically couldn't do it.
You're very interested in the crime novel. You write crime novels. You've written an autobiography of one of the great crime novelists, Chester Himes. Why do you think the crime novel has become such an important genre of American fiction?
I feel that the crime novel sort of came up at the same time that our society urbanized in the 30s and the 40s, and that actually, the crime novel is the urban novel. It's the urban fiction. I think it allows us to see what we have done in creating cities and what cities have made of us in a way that almost nothing else does. It allows us to say things about American society and to look at American society in ways that other fiction doesn't, which is why I think in the 70s you start seeing a lot of writers who probably would have been literary writers in another time turning to crime fiction. And today you see people like Walter Mosley writing crime fiction or Dennis Lehane writing crime fiction when they could easily have been writing, you know, Pulitzer Prize winning novels or at least candidates for the same.
James Salas, I'd like to have you leave us with a recommendation of a Chester Himes book. Choose one that you think is especially good and tell us why you're recommending it.
My favorite and Chester's favorite was, he always said it was the book he wanted to be remembered by, is The End of a Primitive. It's a marvelous, marvelous book. It's beautifully structured. It stands at the borderline between his earlier books and his late books in that he's working with realism, but he's also developing these sort of African-American tropes in this phantasmagoric presentation of the world. I believe that it's one of the great American novels, and I believe it's one of the perfect American novels. And I put it up there with Miss Lonely Hearts, The Great Gatsby, and books of that nature. It's an astonishing work. I've been recommending it for years. I used to buy copies in used bookstores and give it away, and I've probably given away 20 or 30 copies over the years. Definitely the place to start.
Well, James Salas, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Terry. It's been a delight.
James Salas is the author of a new biography of Chester Himes. Salas's own detective novels include Eye of the Cricket and Blue Bottle. This is Fresh Air.